Welcome to Polycast, an official podcast of the Polytom Civilization site.
Daniel Quick.
Makalua.
Imran Siddiqui.
Cardamandua. With guest co-hosts.
Impeller WRG.
Joe Breeze. Okay, so let's do the intro. Let me find out what episode this is. Welcome to the 52nd edition of Polycast, an official podcast of Polytom Civilization site. My name is Imran Siddiqui. I'm joined by such miscreants as Daniel Quick.
Hello, all.
Cardamandua.
Hey.
Makalua.
Very caffeinated now.
Joe Reeves.
Yes, that is me.
Was Joe Breeze on the forum?
Breeze.
It was during the recording of the Yak Civilization Revolution, and that he actually wanted to guest on this show.
Yeah, and Imran said he couldn't be more clueless than Imran is.
Oh, yeah.
How's that working out so far?
You're doing good. And by Ken Impeller, as most of you know from the modcast.
You forgot my tag at the end, WRG. Fail. Epic.
I have been vested.
It's not hard to do.
Aww.
Yes, this is episode 52, otherwise known as 51 episodes too many.
Wait, which one? Oh, aside from the 50th. All right, never mind. Now I got it.
I was just thinking already about episode title. I remember you, Joe, described Polycast with a particular phrase. Two words, do you remember what that was?
I can't remember two words from yesterday, so no.
Inane chatter?
Oh, yeah. Or delicious banter.
No, you referred to Polycast as condensed insanity.
Yeah, that was it.
It's only condensed after Dan edits it.
I think that's part of it.
Now that colonization is finished, you guys all know I'm a temporary at Firaxis, and my temporary status is coming to an end now. Firaxis is not going to be retaining me.
Aww.
Aww.
That's a surprise.
You see, what I did for colonization would normally require someone with a degree in computer programming. Because of my experience with modding and all the help I'd done with the beta for BTS, they really went kind of out of the normal scope of what people would be qualified for that and brought me in for this. But I'm not really qualified for their future projects, which are awesome. But I'm going to be looking in the Baltimore area for something else and maybe someday come back to Firaxis. Who knows? People have done that before. Ed Piper himself was with Firaxis, left, came back. So we'll see what happens.
Well, the Baltimore area is a really good place to be if you want to be game design.
Yeah, I'll be going back to school hopefully in the spring here as well. Finish up my degree and then make myself much more employable.
What are you going back for?
Oh, computer programming. I've already got like about half of one.
Oh, okay.
Already up my sleeve, so just get the rest of that finished.
Computers? Who needs those?
Just your average gaming god, Sid Meier did an interview with Escapist Magazine. You know, he talks about, for example, you know, I think originality is what's really going to differentiate a new designer from all other things out there. And also says, we ended up trying three ideas for every one that we ended up creating a product for. Talks about the balance between remakes and original titles, but as Mark M. said over on a CFC, that the most entertaining quote came from this. Quote, the whole reason we played computer games was to get away from other people a few years ago. But to see that arise has added another dimension to gaming. It's not just for antisocial people anymore, unquote. Anymore, huh?
I feel like I just got burned.
All these social people, they're invading my game. Making them go away.
In the news, we talked about Civilization 4, Colonization, new information, which is somewhat exciting and somewhat boring. And then we also talked about Electronic Arts drops the 2K takeover bid and is going to try a new approach at being evil. And finally, we spoke about MicroProse reincarnating, but as a much, much more lame version of their prior selves.
We don't editorialize on this show.
No.
Not at all.
No.
Of course not. In the Senate, we talked about a new user's question about the Fat Cross, the infamous warrior rush, which sometimes works and sometimes doesn't, whether founding a city on a resource is a good idea or a bad idea.
Honestly, I'm still in shock that Mackie read for Senate and not Forum Talk. In Forum Talk, more great person buildings, or even abilities, improved capabilities for buildings. Civilization 4 colonization, are you going to jump right in, or are you going to study it?
Jump.
And producing nothing in game.
Just like this polycast.
Here's what's been making news in the Civ community.
All right, so Joey, you're about to introduce the news topics incorrectly?
Absolutely. We're going to talk about Civilization 3, colonization.
I haven't heard of it before.
On this episode of Callcast.
Now, we want to talk about the Civilization 4 colonization new information. I think we have the Dutch and the English factions to talk about.
Indeed we do. It was nice we got to see pictures of some of the monarchy of the English and the Dutch and two of the great leaders, whatever faction leaders that will be, available in the game. So for the English, we had John Adams and George Washington, and on the Dutch, I think we had Peter Stuyvesant and Adrian van der Donck.
Yep.
With their traits as well, which is actually kind of interesting.
I didn't think of it last time when we were talking about the leaders, but Stuyvesant was actually one of the founding fathers in the first game.
Oh.
He gave you the customs houses, that's what it was.
He's been upgraded.
Yes.
Because really the rest of the articles is a history lesson.
Yeah, I wonder if anyone else realizes those history lessons are just big dumps of the PDA entry. They just copy the PDA entry.
Big dump.
Having worked for IGN in the past, that is kind of the way they work anyway.
Okay, that's our post. You know?
A big
that's
dump.
A preview. We just copy, paste, edit, send out. You know.
At least they have some information.
Am I allowed to point and laugh at the powdered wig?
Wow. We could do that. And John Adams apparently has tolerant trait, which is, you know, -25% crosses needed for immigration. And he's a libertarian, which means 25% more liberty bills in all settlements.
Yeah, the tolerant trait is what they both share, and it's essentially the English trait.
Washington also has the discipline trait as opposed to the libertarian trait, which is basically -50% soldier equipment required. On the Dutch side, I think they both have mercantile, it seems.
Yep.
They both have mercantile, van der Donck and Stuyvesant, which means market prices are less sensitive. Van der Donck has a charismatic, which is 100% time between tax increases, and Stuyvesant has industrious, which means 25% hammers in all settlements.
Yeah, I don't play either of them.
You should play the Dutch.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think they were probably the most powerful in the original, simply because you could just get more money and then buy more soldiers and then go, ha ha ha, I laugh at your expeditionary force.
I find it kind of scary that you actually laugh at the computer during a game.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, take that computer away.
I always talk to the computer.
Especially if it's in the form of Montezuma or Isabella.
Oh, you better believe it. Like, ha ha, I nuked your butt. Yeah.
Dan, do you do this?
He's much more polite about it.
Pardon me.
No. It's more like, if you'll excuse me, I'll be kicking your ass.
Oh.
Ooh. Are Canadians allowed to say that word?
I prefaced it with, if you'll excuse me, so it's okay then. I like the charismatic trait simply because it struck me as something that was not predictable. Got +25% for this, and -25% for that, and -50% for that, and it all not necessarily having to do with hammers or liberty bells or crosses, thinking about resources or equivalents as you would see in Civ 4, +100% time between tax increases. I thought that was just kind of neat in that respect.
Yeah, the thing that's kind of weird about it, though, is that in the game as you're playing it, you never really get any point where it's like, ooh, I got the thing. It's like, it's completely invisible to you. It's like, that felt like it was longer, maybe, if I aggregated across the whole game, but it's still kind of semi-random, and it's like, I can still get that thing, get the tax increase, bam, bam. And it's like, oh, I just have to remember in my mind that that was about twice as long as it takes on average. You know what I mean? It's like kind of nebulous.
So if you're into instant gratification, you don't want to be playing as this leader.
Yeah, yeah. You don't get the instant gratification of like, ooh, my guys are twice as strong or something, you know.
But more of the slow and steady wins the race kind of attitude can go a long way, though.
Yeah, it can. And there's also the issue that sometimes tax increases are good for you because you get all those Founding Father effects that are keyed off of how high your taxes are. So he's not good at utilizing those guys. Everything's gone from it.
Electronic Arts drops the 2K takeover bid and is going to try a new approach.
Yes, it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very plain. Yes.
So after it's like, this is our deadline. No. Okay, this is our deadline. No. This is really our final deadline. Okay, we'll extend it one more. No, we'll do it one more time. No, we're going to do it one more time. That's it. Goodbye. I can't put up with you. We'll try a new approach.
We're going to throw all these terms at you, like due diligence and stuff. Yeah, that really has something to do with it other than, no.
It's a little like the Microsoft Yahoo takeover where it was going to happen, didn't happen, going to happen, didn't happen, and everybody was afraid it was going to happen. I, for one, thank God every day that it didn't. Don't y'all feel like EA's getting a little bit too powerful in the publishing realm anyway, and they're a little too controlling? You know, think back of your Westwood Studios.
Bullfrog and Origin, and there's a whole long list.
Yeah. I think it's good not to have too much control under one hand. I mean, competition is good. I'm a capitalist. I like competition. Well, I mean, having a variety of different studios also means that if some idiot gets in charge on one of them and decides to go after a certain, goal, that it doesn't impact half of the game studios in the entire country.
Right.
So, you know, you can, that, I mean, if you have a lot of different game publishing firms, what you can do is if one of them has an idiot, well, that doesn't impact the entire industry necessarily.
We're unfortunately seeing that happen through the sheer size of Electronic Arts, though, where broad sweeping changes are changing 25% of the games that would be released this Christmas. And I'm not talking from one publisher. I'm talking game-wide. You know, they make one decision, and entire swaths of games have been canceled. If they wrap that up inside with Take-Two, you know, even more titles we'd see get either diluted or destroyed.
Yeah, it seems like they're trying to turn themselves into a big media conglomerate like Warner or Viacom. And computer and game industry, I don't think that's a healthy model to take from because we need the competition. And while we need some publishers that have deep pockets that can take a risk on things, we don't want it to be all Madden clones and Sims clones and that kind of stuff.
Right. Electronic Arts has been making some really good strides recently, and I'm saying in the last month, to try and bring the gamer back into the game. But I think for the past 3 or 4 years, it's been so dominant, and we have the games you're going to play them and you're going to like them because you have no choice. They've got some ground to make up. They've got some serious ground to make up in order to bring it back to that gamer style. You know, if you think back way in the early days of Electronic Arts where it was all about the game designer, they used to have a jacket leaf that had a portrait of the game designer and a little biography, and then it became just a game publishing machine where it was just title after title after title and sequel after sequel and no original content. They have some ground to make up because of those days.
Yeah, the past year or so where they've been saying they're changing things, it's not going to make up for the bad, decade.
Yeah, exactly. You can't tell I'm kind of passionate about that topic.
Both of us, apparently.
Yeah. I miss the old days. I miss the old days of Electronic Arts where they were a developer and a publisher as opposed to just churning it out. And I would hate to see my beloved Civ or any of the Take-Two properties fall under that. What do we want? Grand Theft Auto 2008, Grand Theft Auto 2009, Civilization 2009. I'm not into it. And I don't want to see Brett Favre on the cover of Civ anyway.
I'm pretty sure that would be blasphemous.
Blasphemy.
There was a story in March of this year that was published on 1UP by a freelance video game writer, Julian Murdoch. He talked to Soren Johnson, and of course the lead designer in Civilization 3 and 4, about his move from Take-Two's Firaxis to EEA's sport team last year.
I love the little graphic at the top where it's like the EA Pac-Man trying to eat the little Take-Two ghost.
Soren was saying that I knew coming in that EA was thinking hard about how to generate new IP and new ideas. It's kind of ironic because it came to EA, but I think having a spirit of independence is definitely important. But he also commented on the buyout of his former studio Firaxis by Take-Two in late 2005. Quote, Take-Two saw us as the Civilization studio as opposed to a studio that just had a high level of expertise and strategy. And also, unquote, and also says, quote, you're never quite the same when you get taken over, unquote. So it sounds like Sorn was not happy with Take-Two taking over Firaxis. And the reason I brought that up is just because of the discussions about EA and buying developers. Interesting contrast there.
Yeah, if he wasn't happy with Take-Two, oh, he would have been even less happy if EA had come in. Well, old EA, not new and reformed EA.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully reformed.
We can keep our fingers crossed. And didn't Take-Two really end up doing the same thing that we all assume EA is going to do, where they started creating those splinter games off of Civilization, plastering the Civ name on games and trying to sell it under its umbrella?
Civ City, Rome, and stuff.
So he's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. At least he got to move on to a project that could be somewhat innovative instead of having to turn out sequel games.
There's a presentation that Take-Two is looking to give to EA to help them better understand the value of their company. But no specific timeline as to when this presentation is going to be given is suggested in either the letter from EA Chief Executive Officer John Riccitiello or the Executive Chairman of TTI's Board of Directors, Strauss Zelnick. But Zelnick does suggest that they will, quote, act quickly to assist you in moving through our process, unquote, given that months have passed since EA first expressed an interest in acquiring Take-Two. Of course, this whole thing about extending the deadline and then it's over, but it's not really. This is a bit of a soap opera. As the negotiations turn.
Zelnick's just saying everybody has a price, I think.
Yeah, don't be surprised if this drags out for years.
What, the podcast?
Oh, snap.
Nice.
I did go there. Microprose potentially coming back to life. That's what reincarnate means. Products, people, and perspectives.
Yeah, I have some opinions on this article, but...
No, really?
That's a funny one.
This started off as a news item 3 weeks ago, and as I started getting into some research on it, I was, ooh, this is interesting, and then that led to another thing, and then it was getting to be far too long a news item, and it had been some time since I had done any kind of online extensive research, particularly for the site. Really hadn't seen a lot of news about this. I mean, this new Microprose, now Microprose Systems with a lowercase p, been keeping a low profile, relatively speaking. And so there are lots of other things going on in the industry to attract people's attention, but I wanted to bring all the bits and pieces that I could find together in one spot. So take from it what you will.
Can I say something here, Daniel?
Yes.
That was a great article.
Why, thank you.
Yeah, really informative. Scarily informative and sad at the same time. No, it really was. Knowing what we know about the original company and what they're doing now, do you really have any belief at all?
Yeah.
That they're going to try and develop games again?
Yeah, is it just zombie naming? You know, they take some name and just...
It's like when they resurrected the Atari name.
That's it.
It's like, oh, yeah, right.
That's it.
Yeah, it's exactly the Atari thing all over again.
I mean, and honestly, the people who are going to buy this equipment, are they people who would remember the name in the first place?
No.
It just feels like shell company or buying a name or just importing importing goods and selling them under a name, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, Microprose was a software company. These guys are going to make hardware. That's so completely different.
Yeah.
They might as well be making soap.
Microprose soap.
Microprose returns to show Commodore how to really tarnish a brand. That's beautiful.
Oh.
Look at those awesome Microprose devices.
What was that? The joystick straight out of 1985?
Kinda. Just a converter box that doesn't do any conversion.
1985, there was Springsteen, Madonna.
Oh.
Okay.
Remember that singing rule?
It hasn't expired yet, you know.
Heraclitus, who's guested on Polycast, well, he has two posts on there, which is kind of a split feeling that some people are no doubt have. He's like, faint, and then woohoo, and then expands on it saying, mind, they will tarnish the name, I am sure of this, and then heart, Microprose is back. Yeah, I think it's easy to let our emotions be like, Microprose is back, but then it's...
Oh.
You go, wait.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Grandpa's back and he's crazy.
Oh,
got news? Email news@apolson.net or send a private message to Dan Q, Book Cutis, or one of the other news editors.
Welcome to the Senate, where we discuss game strategy.
Saw in our Civ 4 general forums wants to see if he understands this right. He's saying it is pointless to build cottages, farms, mines, etc. anywhere past the 21 square cross, basically past the fat cross.
Well, you mean like outside of the city radius?
Yeah.
And no other city is covering that tile? Well, of course it's useless.
Well, not necessarily, because you could get resources beyond the city radius that are still in your border.
Yeah, okay. But other than that, so the cottage parts are definitely useless, because those don't hook up a resource.
Well, that's true. But JV came up with a good idea, which is that may delay invaders if they decide to stop and pillage it.
Yeah, that's an AI issue more than anything, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think a human player is going to pillage unless they just need 3 gold pieces.
You never know.
Where's the AI? It goes, ooh, shiny.
I'm just 3 gold pieces short of my limit.
I'll be leaving now. I got my money. Thanks. I got the village.
Yeah, I can now build that spaceship to Alpha's enjoy.
So it's not pointless. See, it's perfect. It's a strategy.
Anyway, Thiemann also points out that also you can build forts and railroads and roads outside your 21 square fat cross, which is, of course, we know that you should build roads and railroads so you can connect your cities, as well as getting resources. And you can build forest preserves next to empty tiles in hopes that the forest will grow into other adjacent tiles as well. And he also points out you can build mines on hills on the slight chance a resource might be discovered there. Oh, and I didn't know this, but you can build cottages on tiles next to jungles in order to stop them from expanding. Because who wants a jungle?
You could just chop down all the jungles, though.
Yeah, but that's like...
What about the environment?
Yeah, I know! It's global warming and all that sort of thing.
The environment.
I'm going to report you.
Cute little things to live in the
things. Cute little things.
How about those plants that are going to be the medicine I need next week?
But another nice thing for about the forest could help minimize global warming in that I've noticed this, that if that effect strikes that particular tile with the forest on it, it'll eliminate the forest first before it goes after the base terrain. So, for example, a set of grasslands with forest, there goes the forest, but you still have the grassland. The possible upside, downside, depending upon your circumstances, is if you keep a forest within your territory, you're giving a 25% defense bonus to units upon it.
That's really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As for forts, and I think we talked about this, how the AI likes to build forts on resources outside of its any city radius there, I wouldn't do that, of course, because that would destroy, for example, if you had a mine on a hill and there's a resource there, don't put a fort there instead. Unless you don't need it and you're really, really desperate, and that's kind of a choke point. I mean, that's a very situational thing. And again, be wary of placing any forts that's near your border and accessible to the enemy in a turn. You at least don't have units of your own in, because there's another 25% defense boost.
The infamous Warrior Rush, Blitzkrieg 1980, has said he's only done it twice. And one time he only earned 1 city with it, and the other he got 2 workers, but basically he wants to use a warrior rush and feels that he's not getting the results that he expected when he read about this wondrous result. And he's wondering how many people do the warrior rush and why. Frankly, I've never done this before, but I don't know if any of you all have.
Very situational. I'm in that rarely category on the poll, which is actually just so far edging no, never.
Yeah, and he also specifically mentioned the Earth 18 map, whereas if you're playing Rome or any of the other European civilizations, you've got a few targets just sitting right around you. And the AI, even in their first turns, will often send their warrior off to explore. So if you can get a couple of extra out before they bring their warriors back, you can just walk right in. But it is, yeah, one of our catch things. Very situational.
I've mentioned it before, but I'll mention it again. When you do a custom game and you do a dual-size map and 18 civs, oh yeah. And the concept of warrior camping is discussed. It says you don't attack anything but just fortify a few warriors near his cities. Then this person says the AI is too scared to let settlers or workers come out of the city. So he's basically doomed to build archers until the end of time. Once you've got catapults, you can easily take his cities. This is from Siesta Guru.
Yeah, that's a pretty cheesy strategy.
Yeah.
See, I'd rather, if I was going to do a warrior rush, I'd have, I don't know, say 5 or 6, and I'd just plant them right outside the border, and then I would declare war. One possibility. And, of course, once you get to archers, then it's all over. And from what I read, what difficulty level is it that the AI starts with archery? Prince? So it's claimed in this thread. Of course, I never played a prince, so I would have hell. I'm a noble player, so I was just like, oh, okay. The me in team says that he doesn't equate warrior rushing with stealing workers, and I'd agree with that. You're saying the rush was with the intent of capturing the AI capital very, very quickly. I'm already thinking into the possible chariot and horse archer rush or swordsman.
Yeah, exactly.
Deep Blue mentions that. Warrior rush? Nah.
Not so much.
Yeah, I never do it.
Yeah, it's a big gamble. If you sink all your production into making units and then you fail on that attack, you're screwed.
Mm-hmm. Your tech's behind and expansion behind and you're dead.
If you're playing Civ Rev, the warrior rush will work.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's a very different game.
Especially if you army them up.
Yeah. You can spend your first 10 things building out warriors. It's not going to even hurt you.
The only thing that's going to hurt you in that case is the amount of distance that they have to traverse and the potential that they've researched archery or some such stuff. And they have an archer sitting there and just plucking you off as you try and throw yourself against the walls.
Yeah, but it's much more doable than in Civ 4.
Absolutely. As are most things in Civ Rev.
Well, it's definitely a different strategy.
Yeah.
But, you know, with a warrior rush in Civ 4, if you see that got some warriors and you've invested all that, and you go to the rival borders and you realize, oh, shoot, they have archers, take into account how many archers they have, and then also look around and see if there are some mines, for example, that you can pillage, so you could at least slow down how quickly they're able to turn them out. Even if that fails, maybe if you're really, really, really lucky, you will have a decent kind of treasury, and you could, well, you'd have to move your warriors back within your cultural borders to upgrade them.
J-Rex Chandler posted, that's titled Found City on a Resource, and asked if there's any way that he can build the necessary improvement on the tile after he's done it.
No.
All right, moving on.
Next question.
Yeah, just don't do it unless you are under extreme military threat and you need to protect a strategic resource.
Mm.
That's really the only situation in which I would do it. Like, you need to fend off some, I don't know, some unit, and you have some horses, and they could take the horses, they could pillage the horses, so you build a city on the horses. Yeah, so that's it.
Yeah, you do get the resources that it's on top of, but you can't, of course, do any improvements, so there you go.
Yeah, just make sure if you're settling a city on top of a resource and it's not connected by a road or river, that you get on top of that so the other cities in your empire are able to make use of that because they will probably be more useful anyway. Your other cities, presumably anyway, are a little farther along in their development and they'll actually be able to make use of that resource in terms of actual units a little more quickly.
Actually, if you're to the point where you have to provide military protection for the resource by putting the city on top of the resource, it's unlikely you're going to be able to maintain road connections, because those can just be pillaged by the forces that were threatening you in the first place.
Good point.
So you may actually end up being in a situation where that one city is the only thing that can reduce the critical unit. It's that desperate of a move.
Hopefully you're also able to build some sort of redundancy into the road system. And what I mean by that is you just don't have one long string of road. But, of course, it also depends on how large your empire is, how far you are on in the game, how things are going.
Hmm.
Yeah, it seems like that would be an early game tactic anyway.
Yeah, early game when you're under a very intense threat from a hostile neighbor.
I don't think I'd found my city on uranium anyway.
Not intentionally.
That often happens because you've founded so many cities by then. It's, oh, it happens to be popping up under your city, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
You're like, oh, that's why that city's so shiny and glowy.
This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot Civ issues in the forums.
The more great people buildings?
Yeah, this post by John MCD says that I love the great people buildings, and there should be more. Some GPs don't even get buildings, which is pretty woeful. And then later on in the post says, I don't see why successive great people shouldn't act to promote the existing buildings and give it new or improved capabilities, unquote. I particularly like the last concept, so long as it doesn't become too overpowering. Yeah, there's some GPs that don't get buildings. Yeah, I okay. Like being able to promote or build on, it's like, okay, as someone suggested in the turn with regards to a great artist that, oh, you've got a museum to start with, and then later on you get another great artist, and hey, you could upgrade that to whatever it was.
As long as it stayed within great artist, great merchant, as long as it stayed within the genre of the type of great person, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, if it was applied across the board, he thinks they should all have them, so it's kind of one of these things where it's like, if you're going to have everything make a building, then, like, great engineers already give you wonders, so they would give you, like, a regular building, but build that rather than the wonder.
Exactly. Don't give the GPs that don't have buildings, buildings now. Just those that do, look at giving them a second or a third tier one after that. Just as another option, whether people actually take it.
Well, if it's an upgrade to the first building that, like, doubles its effect, to, say, the first level is 50%, the next level is 100%, the next level is 150%, then you're always going to cram them all into the one biggest city you've got. People build academies now in the biggest city, then the second biggest city, sometimes the third biggest city, but by that point you've tapped all your best cities and you can't build anymore and you just pop technologies. If it was this, it would be, oh, I'm going to build all of those in my best city. It would always end up being in the same place.
You could build a national museum that you could add an engineer to and give you maybe 5% more beakers in all cities or something, or 1%.
So it would be like a combination of different types of people?
Yeah, so you'd have your central national museum and then you sacrifice one of your GPs to get a 1% or 2% more gold pieces or 1% or 2% more beakers or hammers, and then you price those GPs early in the game so you get a 2% boost throughout the existence of the Civ.
Well, if it was early on in the game, that 1 or 2%, that would be...
It would be monstrous.
Well, I mean, you don't mean 1 or 2%, you mean like plus 1 or plus 2, is that...
I think, a percent would be nuts, but I mean, they do that within Civ Rev.
Anything less than 10% is worthless.
In Civ 4.
Really, you think so?
In my opinion, yeah. Realize a 10% bonus, you have to have 10 of something just to get 1. I think you have 20, 30, you're getting only 2s and 3s and 4s. The amount of production you have to utilize those bonuses that a lot of people use in mods, if like, oh, this guy gives you plus 10% that, it's like, any less than 25%, I just consider to be just nothing. It's like, not even worth bothering with.
Okay. I'm sorry.
No apologies are necessary on this show. Well, the only apology that should be made is, I'm sorry I started the show, I'm sorry. I know some people would like me to say that, but I'm not going to.
For colonization, jump right in or study it. Well, if you've played the original, you just jump right in. If you haven't played it, then you study it. Pretty much my assessment.
And if you've played Civ 4, you could probably also jump right in, because while it's going to be different, the basic mechanics are still going to be similar, at least.
No, if you've only played Civ 4 but not colonization...
Well, I mean, like, you know how to move your ships and things like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can do that, of course.
Besides... learning from messing up is fun.
As good as the manuals with Civ games can be, even though I'm not familiar with the original colonization, but I am Civ 4, I'm just going to jump right in, start directly with a regular game, and if I get pwned, which probably will happen many, many times, then this will be it.
Yeah, back when games used to take like an hour to install, that's when I read the manual, but now they install so fast, it's just like, I'll just jump in.
We had thought about how people would come to it to... be able to control the things who hadn't played colonization before but had played Civ 4, and you'll certainly be able to control it, like you're saying, you'll know how to move things around, since that's exactly the same. But we figured, everyone knows how to move shit around. It's like, you click the thing and you click where you want it to go. That's been the standard for like 10 years now in every type of game. Who doesn't know how to do that?
So in this poll, 15 said start directly with a regular game. 10 said start directly with the tutorial. One person will read the readme.txt file, then play.
The readme text file never has anything even remotely related to gameplay. Producing nothing. Just like my brain right now. Wilhelm13 asks if your city can just produce nothing at all. And you know, in original colonization you could do that.
Yeah, I always have that goal when I play.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, what? How is that a goal? It's not hard to do. You just set all the cities to nothing. But in Civ 4, that's just what he's referring to. You can't produce nothing. And he wants to even have everything produce nothing, not even any science.
Yeah, and he's talking about when his economy tanking, well, why don't you want to produce trade good thing? It's not trade goods. I'm thinking of colonization. You know, where you said it's to produce money.
Well, wealth.
Yes.
Yes, thank you. What was the word? I haven't had to do that in so long, so.
It would be nice to just make nothing instead of having to delete everything as soon as it is made over and over.
Huh. Why does he have to delete all these things? I mean, like, is this some kind of, like, anti-play tactic?
Yeah, or maybe he's trying to build the city up for a sacrifice offering to another civ to say, here, have this city, stop attacking me. I have no idea.
Yeah, but our second poster in the thread, Will Shands, is like, why don't you produce commerce if your economy's tanking? Hello?
Okay, you can upgrade from pre-settler now.
Yeah.
Well, Amazon Queen seeing that he might not have currency yet, I was like, well, if your economy's tanking and you don't even have currency, we've got an issue that goes way beyond, you know?
Yeah.
Post 10, somebody offers him up a mod and he gets excited about it, that there's a mod that allows him to produce nothing. You gotta have goals, I guess.
Okay, but seriously, if he set himself to produce gold in his cities, or he just had all of them producing zero hammers, and then all of his maintenance was exactly balanced with his gold income, I guess you'd just sit there every turn doing nothing, and your empire would
crumble,
not change, not accumulate, and not make anything. But why would you want that? You're just going to be steamrolled.
Wouldn't you just quit the game and start over if it got that bad?
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
A load of quick save, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, at that point, you should probably whip some populations, and this population would lower your city's maintenance, and you could actually make something again, and build a courthouse, and start to get yourself going again.
Somebody created a mod that adds an idle city building assignment.
If it gave me some benefit, like, oh, the city got happier, or made more of something, or...
Yeah.
I don't know, it's like, everything you want, though, is a quantity, though, that's in the game. It's like, I want to make more culture, commerce, money, gold, hammers, whatever.
You know, if the city's producing nothing, I know what they're making more of. Oh, yeah.
Pappies.
That would be funny. Turn your city produce nothing in your growth spikes.
Population goes up every turn.
The boredom benefit. The boredom bounce.
Colin, today.
In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 441-228-8-7659. That's 441-228-POLY.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at polycast@apolson.net.
For more information on Polycast, our sibling show Modcast, or about Polycast in general,
log into the series official website at polycast.apolson.net.
I like the whole soap idea.
Yeah.
You know, you can make a Sid Meier smell and...
I don't want to rub Sid on me.
I don't know. Have you tried it?
Can anybody tell me what he smells like?
I am way, way too young for this show.
We need to be on at a later hour or something. Don't disturb the kids.
I know. Polycast After Dark.
Oh.
Bow, wow, chica, bow, wow. Me and Isabella were, you know, chilling.
Oh, God.
And then Catherine showed up. And
Catherine, thank you. She seems like she'd start the whole thing.
You know, you'd have to have a surprise in the middle, you know, like, ooh, this gets better.
You know what?
What?
That's enough of your little sick fantasies.
They're not little dippers. What you talking about?
Any minute now they're going to bring in Boobica.
No, don't tell me you haven't had a fantasy about Genghis.
No, I haven't. You can go conquer someone else.
And the show is in a new all-time low.
Thank you. I'm glad I could bring it there.
Oh, please. We've been lower than this.
Yeah, we had a topic guest.
Civ Rev is in the top 10. on the NPD. Y'all know that?
Oh, for sales.
Yeah, sales. For the 360, they made about, I think, $156,000 for July. So somebody wanted it.
A lot of you did.
Yeah, a lot of people buying it. The hard part was my local store only got one copy of the DS version in. I was really disappointed in that. I wanted to see more copies out there to be purchasable, but what do you do?
Yeah, I think the Xbox 360 version is the most popular one, right? Followed by PS3, then the DS.
Yeah, a lot of that goes with console share right now. 360 is still in front of the U.S., although the DS is destroying both of them, but strategy games aren't going to be the DS's strong point. Cooking games, now, it's got them.
Did you say cooking games?
Yeah, cooking. I did. Cooking Mama, nobody knows?
Well, I saw it in the store, but it looked dumb.
Yeah, but hey, it's a top seller.
Cooking? You're not allowed anymore.
I didn't say I bought it. It's just, I know of it. I mean, how many different Nintendogs cartridges were made for that thing? There's four different versions, and they're all million sellers.
Really? I was just saying, because, you know, you could actually cook yourself. I mean, you don't need a game.
Hey.
When I think of cooking games, I think, new recipe, you know, like...
I cook for myself, but I think Cooking Mama looks interesting.
Oh,
oh God. You've gotten Naki, too.
We'll do a review of that next time.
Thank you for listening to episode 52 of Polycast, an official podcast of A Pull from Civilization site. We have been joined by myself. I got to refer to myself first. Yay. Also by Anne Lee, who goes by Cardamandua.
Hey. Bye.
Makalua, who prefers Mackie.
Hi, bye.
Imran Siddiqui, who prefers Imran Siddiqui.
I would have said Dan last, but bye.
Returning guest co-host Ken, Impaler WRG Furlan.
Yup.
If you want to hear more from Ken, listen to the latest episodes of Modcast, our sibling show. And joined by first-time guest co-host Joe Reeves, who goes by Joe B. Reeves.
Bye. Thank you, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, you're welcome. Anyone wants to hear more from Joe, check out our Yak Civilization Revolution special.
Did you actually think this was an opportunity? Opportunity for what?
Entertainment for free.
You think I'm not putting this on my resume?
I mean, come on, Dan. Who really says do we go on three?
Well, I don't know. You know, he's in IT, so...
Do we go on 101-101, or do we go on...
Just want to make sure some people don't want their real names out there.
I'll probably regret it.
You don't regret actually being on here?
No, not yet.
I've been regretting it for 52 episodes.
Yes, and you point to the screen, and it's like, here, you know, see this? You need to suck less in this area.
Okay, I get Senate. And the Senate we talked about... Wait, no, wait.
Yes, we did.
We talked about no wait, really. I missed that topic.
Did I just kill the conversation?
There was a conversation?
Well, don't worry, we'll all take turns killing the conversation.
Also joined by first-time guest co-host Joe Reeves, who goes by Joe... Crap. And we're joined by Joe Reeves, who goes by...
I'm crap. Right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So think about it.
Well, we did, and you see, nobody disagreed, so it's really...
Okay. So I'm a genius.
Returning guest co-host Ken, Impaler WRG Furlan.
Yep.
That was anticlimactic.
Now it's my turn to kill the topic, Joe. See, you're not the only one. And joined by first-time guest co-host Joe Reeves, who goes by Joe B. Reeves.
Crap.
This is... from Firaxis Games. How are we doing today?
Oh, hi.
Hey.
Hi.
I don't really know what podcast this is. Can somebody fill me in?
I don't know.
Wait a minute. You work for Firaxis and you don't know what this podcast is? Fail.
Fail.
record date?
August 30th, 2008.
Sound clips, copyright Civilization IV, and the Warlords, and Meow the Sword expansion packs.
Microprose theme, copyright of Microprose Systems.
Copyright 2008, Appleton Civilization site at appleton.net.